Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. This edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast features Spencer Williamson, the president and CEO of Intellject LLC, a medical device company headquartered at the Virginia Biotechnology Research Park in Richmond, Virginia. Intellject has developed an innovative and compact auto-injector platform which can be utilized for the production of several therapeutic delivery devices. Their flagship product, the EpiCard, is a credit card-sized auto-injector used to deliver a dose of epinephrine, which is necessary to stabilize anyone having a severe allergic reaction. Mr. Williamson joined the company in April 2006 after 15 years with Guidant Corporation, where he most recently served as Director of Sales for the Western United States. In this position, he was responsible for Guidant's cardiac rhythm management business. Mr. Williamson started his career in the Medical Device and Diagnostics Division of Eli Lilly, which spun off in 1994 to become Guidant Corporation. Guidant was subsequently acquired by Boston Scientific. This is Mark Herzog, the Executive Director of the Virginia Biotechnology Association, and I'm pleased to have Spencer Williamson with me today. Spencer, why don't you start with a little bit about your background?
Great. Well, I grew up here in Virginia, went to high school at St. Christopher's here in Richmond, knew from a very early age that I really enjoyed math. Took advanced math classes at St. Christopher's and really found myself heading towards an engineering track. Looked at the engineering schools around the country, but being a potential fourth generation at VMI, ended up there. So I studied engineering. I always wanted to be in some technical capacity from the very early days. My dad's an engineer. And then as I evolved in my career, went back to business school, served in the Navy. The healthcare sector became extremely attractive to me, and I was very blessed to get an offer at a business school by Eli Lilly and Company to join their medical device division. Lilly was, as most people know, big pharma company at the time, had a huge medical device division. It was about a $1 billion business. They had started it in the 70s, but in the mid to early 90s, the pharma companies really started to focus on their core businesses, and so they elected to spin off the medical device division. And I think originally their plan was to sell the division off or sell the pieces off. There were 9 companies in that division. The leadership of that division really wanted to spin off the attractive companies and start a focused cardiovascular company. I was fortunate enough to be asked to join that small company. And so we spun off from Lilly, and that became Guidant Corporation. So that was in 1994. And then over the ensuing 11 years, we had built a business from a $600 million market cap to a $27 billion market cap that Boston Scientific purchased just a few months back.
Spencer, how about telling us a little bit about what it was like in those early days at Guidant and the challenges you faced?
And, we went through some years there where it was really, really dependent on the leadership of a couple of our division companies to execute on new product development and execute on the launch of those products. One person jumps out to mind, and that's Jay Graff, who is leading our cardiac rhythm management business. People thought that he would not be able to turn that business around. We were under a consent decree by the FDA. There were big questions about our ability to execute, and he stepped up and said, "We will." He put the right people around the table. And frankly, that's been, as I look back, a real inspiration to me. To see somebody step up, believe in himself and the organization, most importantly.
Well, Spencer, at some point you received a phone call from your hometown asking you to consider returning for a new medical device company. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought I would live back in Virginia. The medical field tends to be on the coast, up in Boston or the Bay Area or Minneapolis. Was really surprised when I got a call. A mentor outside of Guidant contacted me about this opportunity.
So tell us a little bit about Intellject.
We are a company that is focused on revolutionizing how drugs are delivered, particularly the injectable drugs. And we think we have a platform that will fundamentally change that for people over time. We've got a lot of heavy lifting in front of us. I think we've got a lot of potential. I once had a coach told me, said, "You know, Spence, you keep talking about potential, but potential just means you haven't done anything yet." So we fall into that category, but we're confident we're going to be able to do something special. We've got a great bunch of folks here, and we've got the right partners, the right investors lined up. That I think over time we're going to have a great company.
Spencer, how about telling us a little bit about what it's like to go from a large company down to a startup company in an incubator back in your own hometown?
Well, there are a couple questions in there, right? So there's the first question is from big company to small company. The hometown part's kind of interesting. That's a little wrinkle that's probably a bit unusual. But the small company to the big company to small company is really interesting. I don't think it's for everybody. I think it's for people that have always aspired to build something. And frankly, when I went to Eli Lilly 16 years ago, I thought I would do that for several years and then go run a company or aspire to do that. But I kept getting good opportunity after good opportunity. I had so much respect for the management team there, and they invested so much in us that it was hard to leave. So this is something I've always wanted to do, but hadn't found the right opportunity. So the step is a bit of a scary one, but I think one has to know him or herself well enough to know, will that step be energizing, or will it be absolutely frightening? And it's a little bit scary, even if it is energizing. But I think you have to know, do you like being out there by yourself and trying to build something from the ground up? And in my case, I have absolutely thrived on that. We'll see if I'm successful at doing that. But so far, we're having a lot of fun, and I find it extremely energizing. There are two things that I think are important when you make that step. First of all, there is a feeling of being alone when you're in a big company. Have a lot of support staff and people that can do great things for you, and then you move into a small company. You run your own models, your own PowerPoint presentations. You're doing everything from doing the books to taking out the trash at the end of the day. And so that can be a quite a quite 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 an adjustment. But I think if you get energized back to that first point about the whole thing of building something from the ground up, it can be very, very exciting.
Spencer, how about spending some time talking about the lessons you've learned as an entrepreneur and any advice you might have for people who are looking at following in your footsteps?
Well, I think the first thing is being very honest with yourself and very honest about the opportunity. I think we all introduce biases into things when we look at them. We want to make things work out for one reason or another. But I think you have to be honest in your assessment first about what that opportunity is, and then your capabilities to fit in that opportunity. So I think that is the first step. I'm blessed to have a phenomenal team here, and I feel blessed to be part of that. And we're going to continue to add to that over time. So I think being very honest about the opportunity and yourself as you come in. That which leads to my second point, and that is, you really need to confront the brutal facts about your situation on a regular basis, because if you get too optimistic or too pessimistic, frankly, but too optimistic more often than not, you can really find yourself getting into trouble over in a very short period of time. So you have to be very, very honest, while never ever losing faith in your ability to execute. So it's a very delicate balance, but I think confronting the brutal facts and looking at it that way is critically important. The other piece that I think is critical is that many companies, tech companies, development stage companies that have a great platform technology, have a difficult time focusing. You have multiple opportunities, and if you're not careful, you can convince yourself that by pursuing multiple opportunities simultaneously, you will diversify your risk. And that could not be further from the truth in a small company, because you don't have the bandwidth to go execute on multiple things. Maybe two, but I think 99% of the time it should be one. So you got to really be honest about where's your best opportunity, what's the first plan to go execute, and then very systematically, methodically go out and execute that plan. And if you do that well, I think you can create value in your enterprise over time in a very predictable way. Investors, stakeholders, advisors, frankly, employees, they don't like surprises. So if you can lay that plan out and go execute, then I think everybody's aligned on the same page.
Spencer, you mentioned the investor community. Could you give us your insights into what you think VCs are looking for these days in biotech and device companies?
Yeah, that's a great question. relative to VC investment, as you round up capital in the early days, you want to make sure you do it in a way that is venture capital friendly. You don't want to do anything with angel investors or other types of investors early on that a VC would frown upon or make your investment look like a not a good place to invest in the future. So one thing that we did from the very beginning was tap into some venture capitalists here locally and around the country to talk a little bit about our plan, tell them who we were, tell them what our plan was in terms of getting some early stage money, and making sure that as we structured that, we were doing in a venture capital friendly manner. So that I think is the first step. The second thing is, I think you need to think carefully about who are the venture capitalists out there, who are potentially good fits with you. I think the warm introduction is critical. So we've really, in a very targeted way, have talked to venture capitalists that we have some kind of connection with that we can sit down with, and let them get to know us, let them get to know our business plan, so that we have started all of that process in a very targeted fashion at a time where we don't really need money. We will need money in the future, don't need it now, but we've started that process now so that when we do, as we approach that, we're in a much stronger position to go ahead and raise the capital that we need.
There must have been some funny reactions at the VC's offices when you told them that you weren't really looking for money at this moment.
we hope it was very, very out of the ordinary. No, I think, you know, some people laugh. One VC started laughing and said, well, I don't have time to talk to you then. But he was joking, of course. I think the really good venture capital institutional investors, I think, are really pleased with that approach. And it gives them a chance to assess you, your team, and the opportunity, and see if it makes sense. At the end of the day, you want everybody to be excited about the opportunity 6 months after the investment is made. Other thing that I think is really important is, as you talk to venture capitalists, I think you need to tell a balanced story. So this is all about credibility, and being able to lay out for them, this is the exciting part of the story. This is our path to get there. These are frankly the hurdles that we see. And these are the things that could trip us up. These are the things we're doing to try to mitigate those risks, but they are significant risks. So laying out in a very balanced way what your story is, I think, has been well received for us. And somebody gave us that counsel early on, and it has certainly appeared to have had some good traction with key venture capitalists so far.
So, Spencer, why don't you tell us about what your friends and colleagues thought about you moving back to your hometown and going with an emerging startup company?
Well, I tell you, it was very interesting. When I first moved back, I had a friend of mine that I've known for a long, long time, had heard that I was coming back to run this company, was real excited and wanted to reach out and see if there was some way that he could be involved at some point. And so, of course, I met with him. I haven't seen him in a number of years, but a super talented guy. He didn't know a whole lot about the biotech space, didn't know a whole lot about the medical device space. We sat down to talk. He heard that I was going to be president of this company. He was real excited. Wanted to know what our revenue was each year, what our growth was, what our market share was, what the upside was, et cetera. When I informed him that we didn't have any revenue and that we weren't going to have any revenue till 2 to 3 years' time, he could not believe that I would pick up, move my family to start with a small company that doesn't have sights on revenue for several more years.
Well, Spencer, thank you very much for taking the time to participate in the Virginia Bioscience Podcast.
It's great to participate. I've really enjoyed listening to the previous ones that you've done with Mike Grisham and Dave Lohr and others, and hopefully there'll be a couple things helpful to some other folks.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast. For more information, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org.